You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of December 17th, 2014, and there's seven more shopping days. Have you got your goatee gifts yet?
Oh, God.
Wait, did I say goatee gifts?
Oh, it's a calendar.
I meant goatee gifts.
It's a yearly calendar. Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Albert.
My name is Scott Jusser.
And it is the season of giving. We are leaving some hot scoops under the tree for you, ladies and gentlemen.
The children run down the steps.
Run, little Timmy. It is time once again to talk about our game of the years. Well, this year, in fact, yeah. The year 2014. There's a lot to talk about. We always enjoy this time of year. Yep. Mostly because Scott and I actually don't talk about what our games of the year are ahead of time.
Yeah.
It is a top secret process.
It is.
Here at Experience Points Podcast.
Double blind.
We don't know what they're going to say.
I don't know what I'm going to say. That's what makes it double blind.
I have a series of games in a hat, yeah. And I will pull one randomly. This is another weird year, I think.
Yes.
I think that's safe to say. Last year, I think, was kind of weird as well, if I recall.
I have a prediction about this year, but go ahead.
Do you?
Yeah, continue.
Ooh, interesting. Yeah. I don't think that there was a whole lot of games that really were clear front runners.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not meaning to say that this was a very poor showing for games this year. In fact, I think that there are a lot of great games, and next week we'll be doing a other highlights of 2014 podcast where we'll talk about some of the games that didn't make our list but nonetheless made an impression for 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are a lot of those. So yeah. Next week will be that. But, you know, we have to make the decision.
Yes.
We have to choose our top three because that's what
we're
do.
We're being forced to
There's a man in here with a gun. This is what we do. So, yeah. Scott, do you want to make your prediction before we discuss our list?
So, you know, longtime listeners know that year after year, George and I often overlap. Some years we overlap completely. Sometimes we don't overlap. Sometimes there's like a mixture of things.
Yes.
I predict this year there will be no commonalities.
No commonalities.
We are each going to pick our three top games, our three favorite games of the year. And I predict that there will be no duplicates.
There will be blood, though.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay. Yeah. You know what? I might agree with that.
Yeah.
I have one pick, though, that I think might surprise you.
That I think might surprise you. So let's get started. Ba-dum-bum.
Sorry, the board game.
Yeah.
Okay. So why don't you go first? Why don't you start us off?
Okay.
For number three.
Number three. This game came out early on in the year.
Okay.
It was an award-winning game on the Video Game Awards by Jeff Keighley.
The VGAs. Yeah, we just talked about that.
Uh-huh. But for an artistic reason.
Okay.
It is called South Park, The Stick of Truth.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, you're right. That's not on my list.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the RPG.
Yep.
The lovingly made RPG, by the way. This was exquisitely made. It was award-winning because it's so aware of its genre, right?
Yep. Not only aware of its... That's why I like this game, because it is aware of its genre, but not in that shitty way where it's like, oh, don't tutorials suck? Now here's a tutorial.
Right.
Like the things in it are definitely homages to turn-based RPGs, but it is also an excellent turn-based RPG.
Yeah, I remember coming over and watching you play once, and you were in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And Canada was just a completely different aesthetic.
Yep.
Like a backwards aesthetic, if you will.
Yeah.
Which is partially
our
the joke.
Our simple-minded neighbors to the north will know.
But, you know, the idea that you can go into a whole nother realm, and fundamentally the experience is different, that's pretty cool.
And, you know, I think at its core, it is a game like Super Mario RPG. It is turn-based. You take a turn, the enemy takes a turn, but during the turns, there are button combos that you can hit that mean that you have to pay attention, both on the defensive and the offensive side.
Yes.
It is a very status-based game, like debuffs and buffs, much more than even most Final Fantasies out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not only will you have to debuff other people by, you know, vomiting on them or farting on them or whatever.
Yeah, of course. But this is South Park after all.
Yeah, but you can also, you know, eat like cheesy poofs and like energy drinks and, mm-hmm. and stuff, and you know, that increases your, you know, it's basic RPG stuff, but it's also very necessary for the actual game. Like, you can't just ignore it like you can in a lot of RPGs.
Yeah. So, you know, my question is this though, right? South Park is it has a specific sort of mentality or mm-hmm. approach to humor. JRPGs, right? They are pretty niche right now, I would argue. And, yeah. and certainly to go into a game where you're going to enjoy yourself more if you have a history of playing JRPGs, how actually like accessible is Stick of Truth? I mean, can anyone just pick it up and enjoy it?
Yeah.
It seems like...
Well, here's the thing. Hannah played it to completion. Uh-huh. She's never even touched a Final Fantasy game. So,
interesting.
Okay. I mean, I think the nice thing about it is, whereas Final Fantasy has kind of long wandered the wilderness into, like, what is a Final Fantasy?
It's Gaia.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Exactly. South Park gets back to basics.
Sure.
And limits the number of characters. You can only, you know, you have one major person in the party and then one support character that has different abilities. Like, it's not a mirror of abilities for each character.
Right.
You have to swap out characters. So Butters is not the same as Cartman, who is not the same Butters. As, you know, Kyle, who, uh-huh. you know. So, like, all of the, you know, each person, and, you
this
know.
This is like the Dragon Age of South Park.
No, it really is. Like, okay. And, you know, they fit in roles. Like, there's mages, healers, brawlers. So, sure. like, it's very, for the people that want that sort of thing, it's all there. You'll know the language is familiar. For the people who like South Park, that language is there too, right? Yeah. Like, you'll know yeah. exactly.
It's
like,
terse, adult language.
Yeah, this is the best South Park game that has ever been created. Like, they, like, Matt and Trey wrote it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they, there's probably hundreds of thousands, millions of lines of dialogue in it. Like, it's nuts. Every little item is a piece of lore from South Park.
And this is like a 40, 60-hour game, right? This is like classic.
Nah, it's not even that long. Like, it's, you know, you could probably finish it in 20 hours or something like that. Like, it is wow. like
the... I kind of expected more considering it's so hardcore JRPG.
I mean, it is, but it's also like a modern take on that. You
sure,
know?
Yeah.
Anyway, it is an excellent game, especially if you like South Park. And it's also just, you know, visually speaking, the art style has finally caught up to what the actual show is, and so it's perfect. It's just yeah. it's just an amazing game.
award-winning artistry.
Yeah.
very cool yeah. Okay, I'll start with my first one. My first one is a game I actually don't own,
all right,
oddly enough, and that is Mario Kart 8.
Oh yeah,
so
okay, got it.
This is, I think this is actually the first time I've ever chosen a Nintendo game
mm-hmm.
as my game of the year,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of weird.
Yeah,
but that's partially because I've never really owned a Nintendo system. But you know, when I was putting this list together, and I've been thinking about it for a while now, a lot of games sort of kept coming in and out. Mario Kart almost didn't make it,
mm-hmm.
Just because I felt like, oh, there's all these other great games. But every single game that I have on my list, probably, I mean, besides this one, and certainly on some of the other highlights of the year, aren't perfect in some significant way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's something wrong with it. There's something that I really don't like about it.
Yeah.
But everything else overwhelms the good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, every year I try to pick games to make my GOTY list that I think are really rewarding, really enjoyable, fun to think about, and more importantly, they're interesting.
Yeah.
And I think Mario Kart 8 just hits all of those
yep.
really, really well. Like, the yep. game is almost perfect.
Yeah.
It's super well done.
Yep.
It's super fun. There's crazy amount of depth,
yeah.
more than I think a lot of people appreciate.
Yeah,
it's good.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
really good. I mean, there's not much to say about Mario Kart 8 other than this is Mario Kart as good as it can be.
Yeah, this is the best of Mario.
This is
Kart.
The best of Mario.
I mean,
Kart.
Honestly though, I think it is the best Mario Kart.
Yeah,
like I think it's probably the best Mario Kart that they've ever made.
Yeah,
and I mean, I might as well just reveal it now. That was my number one pick.
Oh yeah. Yes.
Mario,
see?
Yeah, Mario Kart 8 is my game of the yeah. year.
It, I mean,
yeah.
it almost climbed the ranks to my number one too.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah, it's like you're saying, the hidden depth in it, but the depth that doesn't exclude other players who just want to mess
yeah.
around with it. They've over the decades they've balanced the luck versus skill like to an amazing degree.
Yeah.
And now we have mathematical proof. Like, you can
yeah.
go onto the, you know, the online leaderboards and rankings and take a look at who is good in your party.
Yes.
They'll almost always win.
Yeah, they're the same people.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, so it's like, you know, the people that are like, oh, it's all luck, blah, blah. Like, nah, not really. Like, they might lose every once in a while because someone grabs an item at the last second. But, like, that's the nature of the game.
Yes.
But, like, the numbers don't lie. Like,
yeah.
if you are good at Mario Kart, you're good at Mario Kart. You'll
yeah.
consistently win.
You know, and I've heard complaints before, like, oh, this is rubber bandy.
Yeah.
And it is certainly more so than, you know, Forza or whatever,
right.
if you're a hardcore racing fan.
Yeah.
But this manages to encompass so much. Like, okay,
yeah.
it sacrifices a little
mm-hmm.
to accomplish so much more. Like,
yep.
you know, there are those times when you lose and you're not even mad about it.
Yeah.
Like, it is, and it's, that is hard to do. It is really hard to lose because of luck and still have a really good time. Yep. I think any game designer knows that it's very difficult to find a joy in losing in many ways, especially in racing games, especially racing games where you feel like, gosh, I just suck and I'm not good as anybody else. And this game manages to bridge that gap really, really well.
Yeah.
It has awesome online stuff.
Yep.
The replays, genius. Like, those replays are so good. Like, they birthed memes, but for good reason. Like, it's super fun to watch you play. The characters are just so well done.
Yeah.
I mean,
like, when Nintendo brings it, like, when both in terms it, of, like, mechanics and, like, art style, like, it's just incredible. It's, like, they, it's really, like, looking at that game, it's hard to even find the seams, you know?
Yeah.
It's, like, especially during this past few months when game after game was just launching as a buggy piece of shit, you know? Like,
that's a really good point.
It's, like, like, when Nintendo brings it, it's, like, oh, this game is 100% finished.
Yes.
You know, like, this game did not make it out the door with any glaring quote unquote known shippables, you know? It's like, it's like, this is like the seal of quality is alive and well, you know? And like the attention to detail, like you were saying with the replays, is spectacular.
I also think it really opens the door for playing a game, like a well-played game where you experience it and you sort of get the ability to both read and appreciate design. It does that really well. Like the recent maps for Zelda, there's that there's that map where a certain number of people have to hit the blade in order for the blade to come up, and then you can act as a rocket and the level sort of changes around you. That's really cool. And the first time you go through the lap, you might not see it, but the second lap, the third lap, you'll start to understand it and you'll start to adjust play accordingly to hit it. Like, I can look ahead of me and say, you know, Princess Peach and Donkey Kong are gonna hit it, which means I'm going to be able to hit it, so I'll save my rocket boot. Like, that's so good.
Or it's like, I'm first, and I missed one of the three that I needed to hit.
Right.
I'm going to just barrel towards this wall and hope that someone behind me will hit it.
Yeah.
Because I think someone probably will. And so, like, there's all these, like, weird, you know, cost analysis things that are going on,
the
like,
risk, at all times. The risk-reward level of it is, like, top tier. And that, again, that's something that a lot of designers struggle to do well. Because it's very, very hard.
Just, like, seeing where the coins are placed on the map. Like, okay, I could get these three coins, or I could take a slightly sharper turn around this corner. What's going to be better? Like, should I get the coins because they'll make me go faster? Should I cut the turn because that'll save me time? Should I get the coins because that'll deny coins to my opponent?
Coin denial,
like, there's just, like, so many. Like, they finally pulled together all of these various threads from the historical Mario Karts, and they, like, packaged something that is incredible. Like, it's an incredible game.
Even the rupee stage, where you cannot, or maybe it's the F-Zero stage.
Yeah, it's the F-Zero stage.
Where you cannot get the coins unless you go over the speed boosts. But then you could attack opponents, harvest their coins, and skip the speed boosts for more strategic diversity. That's awesome. It's so good. And I think, I'm glad it's your number one, because I feel like I felt really bad putting it as my number three, because I honestly think it's probably the best wholly designed game, just as you described, right? It's 100% on the ball. Fantastic. That's really cool.
Excellent. Good job, Mario.
Good job.
You finally won something.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
I guess I'll just say my second one.
Yeah, say your second one.
Since we might as well get back on track. My second game of the year is Destiny.
Destiny
from Bungie. You know,
wait, what is this game?
What? Well, I haven't heard about this. You know, this game is launched with a lot of criticism, and I think it's a well-deserved criticism. And I'll defend it the same way that I've been defending it for a while now.
To the death?
To the death. and I think that's because a lot of people went into Destiny thinking it was going to be one thing when it was the other.
Yeah.
I think people were going into it thinking, this is going to be like Halo 5. You know, this is going to be a sort of casual shooter or a hardcore shooter where PvP is really the hardcore focus.
Yeah.
And it's far more like an MMO
in
all of the ways that MMOs are than people expected. So it wasn't the out-of-the-box, groundbreaking, brand-new, whoa, you've changing shooters kind of thing.
Yep.
Instead, what they're barring is, like, herbalism, right? Like, that exists. There are times when I'm just farming herbs in Destiny. But despite the fact, or maybe because of it, I'm still finding it one of the most enjoyable games that I'm going back to again and again. At this point, I could whip my phone out and tell you I've easily put in probably over 100 hours into Destiny at this point.
And what are you doing in Destiny right now?
Well, right now, so the expansion just dropped.
Yes.
So right now what I'm doing in Destiny is doing those bounties to get high enough level to do the raid.
Okay.
And the raid is like a level 30, six-person raid, really complicated. But the expansion's really good. Some of the story missions, they've amped up the sort of way that they play around with geography, much more like they do in the raids.
Right.
They've changed some of the bounty locations, too. Like, now weird random guys spawn, and you have to kill them, and you pick up swords, and there's just all kinds of crazy stuff. But I think the core of what makes Destiny interesting for me is there's a social element that is persistent in the way that MMOs are. Like, I can hop on and play with friends and play with coworkers in the way that I can in an MMO, and that feels really rewarding.
Yeah.
Two, I think Bungie's just really good at what they do. Like, the core system itself is fun. I enjoy just going around killing dregs for an hour, right, while I'm watching TV or something. That is a really enjoyable experience. And three, while the story is not great, the world itself is gorgeous, and the score is really, really good.
Yeah, because, I mean, that was Marty O'Donnell's last one.
Yeah, before
Plus, consulted by him. Paul McCartney, so...
Yeah, of course. I mean... we have hope for the future, clearly. Yeah. The act of being in Destiny, I think, is just still really good. I really, really enjoy it. And I think that it's interesting to see how many legs the game still has. Like, an incredible number of people are still playing Destiny.
Yeah, so is... I mean, they were making some noise early on where there's like, oh, we have 8 million, you know, monthly actives or daily actives or whatever.
There's been a few server hiccups, but they've managed it very, very well.
That makes, I mean, if someone can do it, Bungie can, like, just based on their old, like, Halo, like, the money of Activision and the networking know-how of Bungie, like, you know, that Halo stuff was top-notch, right? That doesn't necessarily surprise me. So I think one thing about Destiny is, like, you're like, oh, you know, this is... I'm hanging out with friends like an MMO. I'm, you know, it's scratching the MMO itch. Like, can we just call this an MMO now?
I think it is just an MMO.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that's why... Maybe the root of all of Bungie's problems are that it is an MMO and people didn't expect that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But again, what's so interesting is even the people... Like, it became very common, and I think it's really interesting to look at the criticism that came out, right? Mm. First, it was like, this game is awesome. Wait a second, this game is not awesome.
Yeah.
And then, wait a second, this game is not awesome. Why can't I stop playing it, though?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And it's the same sort of thing that you'll see, I think, in the MMO space, where people go, oh, you know, this isn't really my cup of tea, but then after a while they invest, they want to get that better loot, they want to play around, and, you know, Bungie offers all of those same things that will tickle your incentive to play again.
Did this take away from another game that would have filled this niche?
I mean, right now, it hasn't been too crazy for games. I mean, I think... Generally, I try to play new MMOs because I'm always sort of looking for that communal experience that was really foundational for me playing World of Warcraft.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think
it's really... Because Warcraft put out a new Warlords expansion. I mean, it's kind of... I would imagine that the same type of people would actually like that. Sure. You know?
But I mean, I feel more at home in something that Bungie's done because I've been with them for so long and, you know, loved all of their games. Whereas going into another fantasy realm where I'm like... mashing F5 and shit to, you know, lightning bolt to rats, that's not very appealing to me.
Yeah. Is it the same people that tend to play with you?
Oh, as people who play MMOs? Probably not.
That's interesting, too. Yeah. Like, Destiny is just between all of these worlds, you know? Yeah. I mean, and there's literally, other...
Mars,
Venus.
Venus, the moon. Well, the moon's not a planet.
What are the other...
Earth, Mars, Venus, the moon.
That's what I've heard several people kind of complain about that. Like, they wanted more environments.
They wanted
to spawn into different parts of those environments rather than the same place every time. Like,
you spawn into different environments now in some of the story missions?
That's smart.
Yeah.
I mean, I think...
Although it's a little weird because you're like, oh, whoa, cool new environment. Oh, no, I'm just going through this backwards.
Right, that's a hallway that I recognize, but it's the other way around.
But, I mean, that's a testament to a well-built environment. You can go both backwards and forwards, and it's still good.
I mean, I think those big, like, I didn't play a huge amount of Destiny, but I played a huge amount of the Alpha. Like, I played hours and hours of it.
Right.
And even on the Earth level, it's big, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you have to use those sparrows to get around because... you'll just be walking around for a long time.
And now I got a sparrow that lets me do sweet tricks in the air.
So, I mean, have they implemented any mechanical things to augment the shooting? Like, to me, it felt kind of weird. Like, I'm getting these helmets, but I don't ever see them. I'm getting these sparrows or these spaceships, but who cares? They don't do anything. Like, have they bolted that stuff in yet?
I mean, they have for some of them. Like, you can definitely, you can improve your Sparrow, you can augment the visual look of it. The weapons, they've patched and have been actually very responsive to a lot of feedback. Mm. You know, some of the weapons that didn't feel quite powerful enough are far more powerful now. Mm. I think the visual design of the weapons and the armor, especially the late game armor, is really solid. Mm. So you'll know. You know, yeah. You see somebody with, hey, that guy's got three glowing green eyes. Yeah. They're wearing a specific mask, right. A specific helmet. And then some of the weapons as well are pretty cool. Like, there's a weapon where you can switch the environmental damage, and when you do, it slightly changes the range and the impact. Mm. There's a rocket launcher that is, like, extremely homing, and it's kind of cool. There's weapons, like, when you're zooming down the scope, you go invisible. Like, there's all sorts of weird little weapons and tweaks that I think if you get it or get one of them, or you sort of, you know, pursue that, that can significantly change your sort of play experience.
What have you let's see, what's the best way to put this without, like, kind of sounding like a douchebag? Yeah, it's like,
why are you such a scrub? Why do you suck at PvP so much?
I guess let's talk about that for a second. Like, are you only playing one part of the game now?
I jump into PvP every now mm-hmm. and then, like, if I'm just trying to kill time or something. Mm-hmm. You know, there's certain armor or weapons that I might want to pick up or use for multiplayer purposes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hit or miss. I still think that they don't have the balancing right quite mm-hmm. yet in PvP. Yeah. Like, there are a lot of battles that are very, very lopsided.
Yeah.
It's pretty rare that I play a game
where you mean the balancing, like, just putting the players on the right teams, or the balancing with the actual weapons?
No, putting players on the right team. I think the weapons are perfect. I mean, they're relatively well. Yeah. So, for example, I used to play a hand cannon, and I really enjoyed the hand cannon quite a bit, and I could not get it to work in PvP, and I finally realized what I was kind of doing wrong was I would always aim before firing instead of firing in the process of aiming.
It was like a classic Call of Duty thing where you should be pressing the fire button first and then the sights button because you'll get one or two bullets in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The moment I started doing that, my skill in PvP with the hand cannon went up. I've since moved to Pulse Rival in PvP, but both are really satisfying and play differently.
Yeah. Have they done anything with how the drops work or how the classes work? Like, are you shuffling between classes? Are you, like...
I mean, there's, you know, both... there are certain ways that the classes change how you play. Mm. You're always going to be using the same gun, so it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. But PvP versus PvE, you know, if I'm being a tryhard, like, in a PvE, I might switch to a class that goes invisible so I can res people easily. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I'm just YOLOing it, you know, I'll just go whatever, hardcore blade dancer, and let somebody else pick me up when I suicide.
Because that was the big thing about, like, the MMO side of it. Like, for years and years, we've been talking about, like, the ethics of these games. And, you know, there was a point in time where there were some, like, pretty downright unethical ways that Destiny was dropping loot.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, okay, well, here's the thing. It's a purple, but, oh, just kidding, it's green when you unlock it.
Yes.
You know, it's like, and also, like, you got to go back all the way to the town to do it. Here's a few load screens for who knows why. Like, I mean, I think they're just trying to serve so many masters. Like, people that are experienced with MMOs like you are can already see, like, hey, you know, Blizzard solved this 10 years ago. Yeah. Or, you know, Age of Conan solved this. You know, like, I don't get it. You know, so it's... I'm interested to see what the lifespan of this is and, like, what it looks like as an evolution.
I mean, it's interesting because, like you said, that was a big issue, and they fixed that very quickly. At this point now, if you get a blue drop, it's a blue item or better. Yes, absolutely.
But or better is even weirder. Now they're just, like, they're going the opposite direction and pandering.
Well, it was always that way as well. Like, if a blue drop, you could have gotten a green, but you could also get a purple. It's rare. Most of the time, it's blue.
Nuts.
But,
it's nuts.
I mean, that's exciting, though. Like, you take a blue engram, and you're like, oh, sweet, you know?
I guess it's exciting,
I mean, I could be wrong. I'm pretty sure that's how it works.
It's just... It's just strange to see Bungie go from Halo, which is... this should be satisfying for the sake of the actions you're taking.
Yes.
Not for the sake of the meta reward that you could potentially be getting.
But that's what I'm saying, though, right? Like, this wouldn't have made my list if I felt like the only reason I was playing was to partake in a sort of loot fest.
Right.
I genuinely think that playing the game itself is awesome. Like, yes. I really enjoy it. They are on the ball when it comes to playing a shooter in that space, designing environments for that particular shooter as well. I think that's really great. The loot is just a sort of added bonus. And, you know, while it can be frustrating and they've made some changes that are negative, I think they've also shown a clear responsiveness to the fan base and a willingness to change things up and take risks. You know, they recently got rid of some of the requirements for, like, Ascendant shards. Mm-hmm. They added an ability to buy herbalism. I guess I'm calling it herbalism. It's not herbalism, but you know, there's all sorts of weird little tweaks that they're changing. So I think that it will probably have a long and healthy life because they're clearly willing to tweak things.
Yeah. Two last questions. One about the fan community in general. Yeah. Like, it seems like I kind of just wonder what the development style is. Yeah. Like, they clearly thought some things were a good idea, or that at least they didn't think they were a bad idea, and then it's like everyone complains and they change it.
Yes.
And so like, do you think is that unique to Destiny, or is that happening in other games you're playing?
I think that's probably just reality now.
Yeah.
Like, as games as a service, they have to be responsive.
Right.
I think a lot of companies don't.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the idea of, you know, acquiescing to their fans. But mm-hmm. I think to some extent, Bungie knows they're kind of new at this
right.
in a way. So they might as well sort of be responsive. And, you know, not everything they've done has been a crowd pleaser.
Right.
One thing I want to say, and this is actually one of the reasons why it went from number 3 on my list to number 2,
mm-hmm.
is Sherpas. Have you mm-hmm. heard of the Destiny Sherpa?
No.
You know what a Sherpa is in real life,
yes.
right? Like an indigenous person who will take you up Everest or whatever. There's a group of people, and this happened around the last raid, who would go on Reddit, and they were high-level players who had done raids many times,
mm-hmm.
and they would just volunteer mm-hmm. to help newbies run through it and learn mm-hmm. how to do the raid. That's so cool. Like, that's such a classic MMO community of like, oh, there's a group of it's like fucking Batman. Like, you can call and be like, hey, buddy, I need some help.
There's like a symbol in the sky that you light up.
Yeah, like, just like it's a big old like Destiny.
Fires in.
Yeah, it's like a camel. You know, it's something silly, but the fact that little things like this have popped up, you know, there's an email you can sign up that will tell you when the vendor is selling rare fusion rifles because there's a quest for that. There's a website everyone uses that are like public events timings. Like, there's all sorts of communities that have popped up around Destiny in the exact same way communities pop up for MMOs.
Right.
There are hardcore guilds, and there are PvP guilds and raid guilds, and like all that kind of stuff is out there, and that's exciting. That's really cool, and that's a type of activity I haven't seen in the shooter space, so it's pretty neat.
So the second question
yes.
is, what is the future? Like, I know we have hope for the future.
For the future.
But I mean, this is like what, year one of a 10-year cycle? Like,
yeah.
What do you want next year in Destiny?
I mean, I think everybody wants the same thing, right? They want new environments and they want a better story.
Mm.
I think that's probably a lot of it.
Can you do a better story in an MMO?
I think you can. Yeah, sure.
I mean, if you're not,
you know,
Blizzard, I don't know. Like,
I was about to say Blizzard has actually done really cool stuff in that space. Yeah, I think you can.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Bungie can. They've been good at it in the past. I think they just sort of, I don't know, maybe didn't focus their efforts on it in a way.
Yeah.
Even this current expansion has a better voice actress than the previous
That's
ones,
good.
You know? So
I mean, it seems like Destiny overall, even if, you know, it seems like it was in development for like 10 years or whatever, but it still came in pretty hot.
Yes.
And it seems like,
well, you know, it's entering the atmosphere.
There's a lot of heating resistance.
Yeah.
It just seems like it seems like there was somewhat of like, well, we're just going to put this out and the fans will figure out what they like and what they don't like.
Yes.
It's almost like the opposite of what happened to Mario Kart.
Yeah.
You know, it's just been fascinating to watch from afar at this point.
That's 100% true.
Yeah. Like, it seems like for me, because there's going to have to be like a Destiny 2, right?
Yeah.
But there's also going to have to be several more DLC packs.
Yeah.
So it's hard to know when to jump into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine it will be probably around the sequel for someone like me.
I mean, I would actually say now is a pretty good time, because actually getting from level 1 to level 20 or level 30 is not that hard.
Yeah.
You know, and then,
I mean, it wasn't that hard originally to me anyway.
Yeah, and it's not that hard now. And, you know, if you've got people, if you have friends that are playing that are slightly higher level, they can jump in with you and easily run you through raids where you're probably going to get some decent drops, you know?
And then, but that, it kind of brings me back to the whole point of like, why are you playing this game?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, well, you can get some high level people to run you through and let you skip.
Well, but it's not, you know, it's not like an MMO, like, where like they're just running through and spamming everything, you know, like you could go and face challenging levels. It's just that you're not going to be doing as much damage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes and no, right? Like, you could also just play on your own. That's totally fine.
Yeah.
Or PvP. I mean, if you're into PvP, you don't have to PvE at all. You could just do PvP and climb levels that way.
Yeah.
And when you join your friends, everything is totally equalized.
That's almost... So, I think that, like, there's two things, right? Like, if I were to play Destiny, it would be only because you and our other friends are playing it.
Yes.
Or I got really, really into the multiplayer.
Yeah. Like, well, that's true for me too, though, yeah. Right? If all of my friends stopped playing Destiny, I would probably stop as well.
Right. So it's like it's not the shooter that people are accustomed to playing from Bungie.
Yes.
From a single player perspective, obviously there's like the Halo multiplayer is probably more popular than the single player, but like without the social aspect, I can't really imagine, because like the loot doesn't offer any reward for me. Like no, I don't give a shit 100%. About it. So it's like,
but that's why in this sense it behooves you again to think of this as an MMO. You would never say, "Oh, this MMO isn't fun without other people."
Right.
It doesn't exist without other people, and that's exactly where Destiny is at.
Yeah, yeah. This is actually probably a good transition point to my second game.
Okay, I think I know what game this is.
Yeah, I mean, you already know. I spent over 120 hours this year playing it.
Euro Simulator and it 2014.
Is, yeah, I was about to say, it is Train Simulator. It is Titanfall.
Yeah, Titanfall.
So Titanfall is basically like the philosophical opposite of Destiny, like as a shooter.
Sure. Fast-paced.
Yeah, super fast.
Really quick.
All about PvP. Well, actually, that's not true now. There's been a few
story
patches
missions?
That are kind of AI, like PvE wave-based
interesting
challenges. But we've talked about Titanfall quite a lot this year. It was like one of the most surprising games of the year for me.
Yeah.
I dumped so many hours into Titanfall, and it is just because it is so satisfying for me, like on a mechanical level.
Yeah.
Like it is the spiritual successor to Quake in my mind.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What it's so interesting to me, and we've talked about this before, but when I think of Titanfall, I can't really think of a reason for it to not be popular. Well, other than Destiny, right?
Yeah.
Like, other than, oh, there's a competitor out there that does a slightly better job with some of the social elements. I agree. Titanfall is a great game. It's really good. I mean, it would never have made my list, and I don't know why I stopped, per se, but it's a good game.
I mean, that's why it's like the shooter. Like, Destiny is not really a Titanfall or Call of Duty competitor.
Yeah.
Like, Call of Duty is still kind of selling a lot. Like, Call of Duty is still kind of the thing to target, like, if you're if you're looking at the shooter space. Because, you know, Destiny has that social element of it, whereas the social element in Titanfall is, like, me and Eric playing it. Or I actually now recognize people that I see playing Titanfall a lot online.
Yeah. And I'll follow them around. Because they're
teabagging you again. I mean, there are people that are so good at that game. Like, it is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it is just it's just straight up competition. And it's straight up, like, how satisfying does this gun feel? Like, the mechanics of it. For me, and I think it's just a larger thing about the market in general. Like, if this game came out, you know, years and years ago, it probably would be super popular.
Yeah.
But, you know, with millions and millions of people playing League of Legends and Dota, like, the competitive scene is not shooters anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like, that just doesn't exist.
So,
like,
I mean, if you're, you know, Mr. Businessman,
right,
to borrow him for a second, channel his dark essence into this room.
This is the best time of year for Mr. Businessman.
What? I mean, you know, again, I don't know the numbers. I don't know if Titanfall was a financial success or a failure or whatever.
Yeah.
But where do you go from here, right? How do you improve Titanfall?
Yeah.
What does Titanfall 2 look like?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like if you're looking at your game and go, you know what? I actually think we pretty much did everything right.
Yep.
Is it just not the time? Or, you know, are you selling apples when everyone's into pears?
Yeah. I mean, I think Titanfall 2, I don't know enough about this, but the initial investment is there.
Mm-hmm.
Titanfall 2 can be more iterative, and the studio already exists. The lawsuits have calmed down a little bit. Like, I mean,
finally,
like,
right?
Like, seriously, like, yeah. like Titanfall was held up for various reasons outside of development too. Like, it's, you know, I think you have to be more careful about how you position it in its place, like in the market. Like, I don't think it's going to be like the next Halo, right? Like, you have to be able to go after a segment rather than think that everyone who buys an Xbox One is also going to have Titanfall.
I mean, they wanted that.
Sure.
They were pushing Titanfall hard.
Microsoft needed that, right?
Yeah.
And I just don't know if they... I mean, there's obviously going to be a Titanfall 2. Like, the thing sold millions and millions of copies. Like,
sure,
you can't not have something from EA that, you know, will just die on the vine like that.
Yeah, it just doesn't have the tail, I imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, at least certainly not in the way that, you know, Destiny does, although very few games do.
Yeah. I mean, I think I was thinking about this just because to articulate why it taps into a lot of things that I think are good about the MOBA space in general. I was thinking about Titanfall, and the reason why I like it is that there are so many things to keep track of at once. It's kind of like a MOBA or kind of like a football game.
Yeah.
So like when you're playing a football game and you're the quarterback, you have to think about the game clock, that's ticking, the play clock, that's also ticking. And then once you hike the ball, you kind of have an internal clock about how long can I stand in the pocket before something bad happens to me?
Yeah.
Or like how long, even if something fine, how long can my receivers run around out there without getting covered or tired?
Yeah.
You know, so there's like multiple times going on here. Like how much time is it going to take till a 2-minute warning? How much time is it going to take till halftime? Like,
yeah.
So in Titanfall, it's the same thing. It's like, obviously there's a match clock. You know, if you don't reach the score before the match ends, the clock will end the game for you.
Mm-hmm.
There's a countdown to get your Titan. You know, there's a countdown to when other people are getting their Titans.
Right.
There's a countdown to whether you can use your special ability as a pilot. There's a countdown to when you can use your special ability as a Titan, when you can reload your secondary weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's just so many
things. So it's a waiting game is what you're saying.
There's so many things to think about, right?
Yeah.
I could use this right now, but I know it's going to be another 40 seconds before I could use it again.
Right.
And that 40 seconds is going to be the make or break. Or like a MOBA, like, I'm going to kill a bunch of grunts right now, which will allow me to build the Titan faster, and I'm going to bank on the fact that I might lose a little bit of score up front to gain a lot more in another minute.
Yes.
So it's like, it's taking all of those things that make MOBAs so great, like investment in the long term versus kind of just going after enemies right away.
Right.
And then translating it into a genre that traditionally doesn't really have a whole lot of that.
Yeah.
And doing it on a level that looks amazing. I mean,
yeah,
like,
it looks really good.
These are like the Call of Duty, the original Modern Warfare guys. Like,
yeah.
The game looks incredible.
I mean, you know? It's still epic to drop your Titan.
Yeah.
Especially if you can drop it onto somebody.
Yeah, I mean, the size and scale of the game, the maps are excellent. Like,
do you think that it suffers because the max group of players is 6 versus 6? You know what I mean?
Does, like, League of Legends suffer because of that? Like, I mean, it's just...
I mean, the problem is, and I think this is true for Destiny as well, right? Like, people go in with certain expectations.
Yeah.
Destiny was able to move people who went in with an expectation and were upset and maybe stuck around anyway,
mm-hmm.
whereas maybe Titanfall didn't. I don't know.
I mean, the thing that I, you know, as a somewhat casual Battlefield player
mm-hmm.
always thinks about is, you're playing Battlefield, sure, there's like 40 people or whatever on the map. I'm always getting killed by the same dude anyway. And like, I'm fighting in the same little subway. Like, that's kind of the scale of battle for me.
Yeah.
I think that's more of a number than anything else. And it's like,
interesting.
People see it and it's like, oh, weak. It's like,
there's some really expansive Battlefield 4 maps, to be fair. But
I mean, sure, it's expansive, but what are you doing in it? Like, to moment?
Like, plus, are you in a mech? No.
Well, yeah, and like the other thing is, there's some expansive, like, there are places in Titanfall that are valid places to be as a pilot that you have to get to by ejecting out of your mech.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way to get to them except by ejecting, and then if you see a sniper up there, you know you're in trouble because you have to either sacrifice your mech, be a really good shot, or find cover immediately.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, the level design is excellent.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know if this is the right time and place for a game like this, you know? Like,
yeah. Sorry, Titanfall. You know what would make it successful? Huh. Kaiju, I think, is what it needs.
I mean...
Can you imagine, though, if, like, half the people got mechs and half the people got, like, ancient gods dropped down and you were, like, a monster?
I mean, I guess, like, they're kind of... They have Titan versus Titan...
I think imagine Titan versus Kaiju.
This is the thing. I don't think people have an appetite for anything that doesn't have that level of novelty anymore.
Mm.
Like, if you released Quake 3 today, it would not be a success.
Yeah.
Like, but Quake 3 is about shooting dudes with weird guns, but not that weird.
But Titanfall does have novelty, right? Like, we haven't had a good mech game in a really long time.
I know, but it's not novel. Like, you just, like, painted a situation where it's like, oh, it needs monsters. It also needs 20 people in a map. It also needs this and that.
Yeah.
And it's like,
so demanding.
Well, I just think people have expectations around the spectacle of things and, you know, what games should be capable of and, you know, to be honest, like, you have to put in a few dozen hours before you really get good and before...
get good.
Yeah, I mean,
I'll never get good, let's be perfectly honest.
I mean, and it's hard, like, and you can be better at some modes than you are at others. Like, maybe your job on the team is to be a farmer. Like, you'll never get the most,
maybe that's it, right? Maybe the game is actually deceptively complex, and the people who stuck around are the people who are willing to master it.
I mean, it is certainly deceptively complex. I just don't know if... like I said, if you released Quake 3 today, I just don't think it would be the phenomenon that it was in 1998 or whenever that game came out.
Well, the graphics suck.
It's just so, it's, you know, it is a fast-paced shooter meant for PvP, and that's it. Yeah. Like, forget about the story, forget about loot grinding, forget about everything. Like, it's about testing your skill. And, like, I just don't know.
People still play CSGO and stuff.
Yeah, but it is a niche. Like, that's not.
That's true.
Like,
yeah, that's true.
So I think with Titanfall 2, it's like the idea is, okay, we need to make sure that in this niche that we are in, we do the best job possible and we don't get hamstrung by making this like a quote unquote system seller.
So that's where you would go, is you would embrace the niche.
I mean, they already have an extremely solid and accomplished game. Like, there's plenty that they can do within those bounds. I think it's kind of foolish to chase something like Destiny that is an MMO.
Yeah.
And I think it's foolish to chase something, you know, like even something like TF2, which is like all about loot, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this game is not about loot. Like, you can't unlock, you can unlock little insignias for your Titans and it's like a complete waste of time. Yeah. You know?
Well, how dare you?
Like, who cares? Like, I could be shooting people right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people hunt dog tags in Battlefield.
Which again, it's like, why? Like, what are you doing? Yeah. Like, I could, you might as well, if you wanted to do that, you should, Nintendo should create a new Pokemon Snap game.
They should make a new Pokemon Snap game.
Yeah. Like, don't turn everything else into Pokemon Snap if you're going to create like a spiritual successor to something like Unreal or Quake.
I disagree. Turn everything into Pokemon Snap. Okay. So,
Destiny 2. I'm interested in this because Destiny was one that I expected.
Yeah.
Mario Kart was one that I didn't expect.
Yep.
Number one, I am on the edge of my seat here.
Temper your enthusiasm. Okay. Okay. Because you have Mario Kart 8. I think Mario Kart 8 is better than the game I'm going to talk about now.
Okay.
Right? In many ways.
Right. Okay.
The thing that I always go back to...
And this Assassin's Creed Unity.
Yeah. Here we go, everybody. Trying to... You know, when I try to think about what... You know, fuck. I don't know. Maybe this list doesn't make any sense. What I'm always trying to do is say, what are the games that I find surprising or rewarding, or do I want to value, or do I want to say, in this game, I'm finding something that no other games are offering, or give me hope for something that comes in the
future. Hope for the future.
Hope for the future. Paul McCartney, Destiny. Paul McCartney is my number one gamer.
God. Trending gamer.
So my number one is Transistor.
Oh, okay, okay.
I don't think that's that surprising, because I am such a super giant fanboy.
Super giant.
I'm a super giant, I'm their giantest giant fan.
I expected this to be like a number three pick.
Yeah, so did I. I mean, to be honest, like, you know, here's my thought process, right? I'm thinking, okay, here's a group of games that I have. How do I want to rank them?
Yeah.
And I look at Destiny, I go, man, I've put in a ton of hours into Destiny. Maybe that should be my number one. And then I'm like, you know what? That story really sucks. Like, it's a really bad story.
Yeah.
It's not as surprising as I wanted it to be. Yeah, you know what? That's not my number one.
Yeah.
I look at Mario Kart 8 and go, man, Mario Kart 8 is so good, but it's just a racing game. Like, it's not, you know, it's not...
Take that, racing fans.
You know, everyone goes to games for different reasons, and sometimes I go to have that just pure dumb enjoyment that a racing game provides.
Also, compare the time and the effort you put into Mario Kart versus Destiny.
Exactly, right? Yeah. Like, so that's fine, right? Yeah. I want to honor Mario Kart, but at the same time, it's not what I'm always looking for in games. Transistor is not perfect. We have a lengthy podcast about Transistor that I encourage you all to listen to, where we debrief that game. And it's not as good as Bastion. And Bastion is definitely one of my favorite games of all time.
Yeah.
But it's still something that is just... I think about the games that came out this year, and it's one of the few that I can look to and say, you know what, this game is something that I think I will go back to. It's something that I think is really rewarding. It's something that takes risks in some ways, right? Like, it's an aesthetic that's totally unique.
Yep.
It's a game that is surprisingly deep, narratively speaking. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of interesting things that game is trying to say about technology, about democracy, about, like, you know, the way that
relationships.
Relationships. Silicon Valley, if you want to really, like, stress that. Like,
for sure.
And that's totally unsurprising. I think it's not, you have to look for that as well. It's not something that's just handed to you on a plate.
Yep.
It has an amazing score, of course, by Darren Korb.
I still listen to that. I've been listening to that all year. So that game came out in what, April or something?
It came out, April or May.
Yeah.
I still listen to that Transistor soundtrack because it's fucking phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's not the game that I wanted it to be when I first, because it, you have to take it on its own terms. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to work on getting the, those narrative bits.
Yep.
Even the game itself, the complexity is there, but like it's not something that is the sort of instant enjoyment of like, say, a Brawler that Bastion offers, right? Yeah. You have to start really figuring out how you want to play, tweaking the abilities, making a sort of perfect system. And it's not necessarily the genre that is my number one genre. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it doesn't fail in many ways in any particular way.
Yeah.
So, you know, how do I not reward it? Of course it has to sort of make my list.
Yeah.
And this is weird, and we'll talk about it next week, but there are a lot of great games that I'm shocked are not on my list. Like, I'm surprised. Mm. When I sat down, I don't think I would have ever said in a million years that Mario Kart 8 would be in my top three list.
Yeah.
But when I look at that game, I look at Transistor, I look at even Destiny. I don't think I expected Destiny to be so high on my list.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a game that, there's a few games that I've been playing lately, Destiny included, that even a couple months ago, I would not have said this would be on my list.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Transistor is making it, but there's a lot of games that are really, really great that aren't on my list for one reason or another, and we'll talk about it next week. But, you know, you've got to sort of, you have to do something different, I think, now. You have to pick my interest in a way that isn't, you know, picked by a lot of other games. Mm-hmm. And I think both Destiny and Transistor match that to a T.
I think, I mean, it's something, that game, I thought long and hard about that game, like, probably a similar, you know, similar thought process. And there's, I think I actually probably liked the game more than you did.
I think you did.
Yeah, which is weird. Yeah. You know, the lists are a weird thing. Because I went through all those challenge rooms, and then I replayed the game, like, with all of the processes, or I think they were processes? No, yeah. Inhibitors or whatever they called them. Yeah. Like, basically the equivalent of the idols in Bastion. Like, I turned all of them on and played with those. That's like
so difficult.
Like, it's just, it's very tactical. It's very, and again, it takes a lot of those things that are popular from MOBAs and puts them into a different context. Like, you're looking at cooldowns, you're looking at what stacks, you're looking at most of the ways that you kill enemies in those games. It feels like Dota. Like, you freeze an enemy with one of your moves, and then you wail on them for a little bit, and then you move so you can recharge that ability.
Yes.
And then you go in again. And it's not a coincidence that if you look at Greg Kasavin's Steam profile, he has hundreds of hours of Dota 2.
Yeah.
So I mean, like, those guys really like that sort of thing, and they're kind of borrowing from genre the same way that they borrowed from the kind of Legend of Zelda and Secret of Mana style, you know, Japanese beat-em-ups.
Yeah. And you know, it's that fluency, that genre fluency that I find also so compelling. Like, that's something that I love in any medium, books, television, film. Like, if you were aware of the genres and take and pick and choose, and not only that, but create a system where it's almost easier now for other people to learn and appreciate that genre, right?
Yep.
Like, Transistor does such a good job of encouraging you to experiment with what you have access to.
Yep.
And you will be surprised by the sort of ways that you'll create and tweak your game. And I think genuinely, someone who's not into the strategy genre or into a game like this could find something really enjoyable and learn, you know, learn, become better players.
Yep.
That is something that I think every game should strive for in a way. And Greg Kasavin and that Supergiant team make it look easy.
Yeah. It's, and, you know, the storytelling is, like, mature in a way that you don't really see from most games, you know, even in the, you know, the AAA space especially, but even in the indie scene, like, it is, it feels much more of, like, the independent milieu than it does, you know, at home at something like Xbox Live or PSN or something. Like, it's, you know, it's very understated. You have to do a fair amount of reading if you want all of the world, like, there's a lot to, there's like wildly differing opinions as to what that even game is about, which is great. You know, I think when I finished that game, I was pissed at the story.
Oh, really?
And then I played it again and I was like, oh, okay. I think I missed this.
Yeah.
Like, I think I missed the point of Red's choice. And then I changed my attitude about what I thought the story was about.
Yeah.
Either way is great. Like, I'm rarely angry when I'm playing a video game story.
Okay. I was gonna say, we just played Smash.
Oh, and yeah. That's a quiet rage. I mean, the only thing I get mad about is, like, how dumb the stories tend to be, but, like, I'm rarely, like, kind of morally outraged when something happens.
Yeah.
And, like, something happened at the end of Transistor. I was like, man, fuck that game. And then, and then, like, I kind of replayed the sequence and, like, played a few other things. I was like, oh, I think I'm I don't think I read far enough into this. Like, I don't think I actually understood what was happening.
I mean, we even talked about it in the debrief as well, but it's the same thing for the music. Like, mm-hmm. you listen to those songs, and they're better after you play the game.
Yeah.
Because it imbues it with so much more meaning.
Like, yep.
Again, I mean, Bastion had two different endings.
Right.
And both changed how you viewed everything that sort of right. happens in that game in a really interesting way. Transistor has one ending, but I still think that it is so much more open to interpretation than so many other games of its size and length.
Yep. And also, they do a good job with why you would play that game again from a mechanical perspective.
Yep.
And that also leads players to unlock the thematic reasons why you should also play it again.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so it's using that mechanic... the mechanical ethic machine, you know, to kind of like drip all that dopamine into your brain, like, oh, I unlocked something new, oh, I got some more points. But at the same time, you're also thinking about how those things factor into the story that they're telling.
Well, especially because they're all attached to real people with their own like narrative. Yeah.
I mean, Transistor, like, there's certain reasons it basically got bumped because of a lot of other games that I just, you know, I had to include.
Yeah.
But like, I think Transistor is a game that both a game like Destiny and Titanfall can learn from, where it's like, here's how to include a story and a driving, like a compelling mechanic that keeps players coming back, because you want to hook those DAUs, right? You got to have those active players, but you also want to say something meaningful with both the mechanics and the story. Like, Transistor is great. It's like, hey, Titanfall people, this is why people like the story of Transistor. Hey, you know, Destiny people, this is why people like the story. Now you can kind of see how those two story and mechanic aspects of it hook together.
Wed them together.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bastion was the same way. Yep. Like, clearly they're good at it. They're paying attention.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty incredible game. It's also incredible to, like, make that as a follow-up to Bastion, because, which is almost like an impossible task.
Yep.
You know, you make a second game after Bastion? Like, what are you going to do?
Bastion 2?
Like, I struck gold, so I'm going to go to another mountain and try to strike it again. You know, like, it's weird.
Well, now we'll wait, like, what, 5 more years or something for the next?
I mean, take your time. Like, fine. That's true. You know, like, it's clearly something good is happening over there in that studio.
Something.
You know?
some dark magic.
Yeah. Those are good lists. I'm so happy that Mario Kart was the overlap.
Me too, because you said there wasn't going to be overlap. And as soon as you said that, I was like, I don't think he knows that Mario Kart 8 made my list.
That was good.
Yeah.
Mario Kart just slid in there in the last second.
It did. What's interesting is I think there are a few games that will even be surprising next week,
mm-hmm.
because they're not games that I expected to almost make my list.
Yeah.
Or there are games that I was certain when I played them that this is going to be in my top three, mm-hmm. and it's not.
Mm-hmm. Flappy Bird.
Flappy Bird. Dude, was that 2014?
I don't know. The years really just run together.
It's been a long year.
We are happy to have you throughout the entire year, and we always like to hear your emails, your thoughts, your feedback. experiencepoints@gmail.com is that address.
And the holidays are coming up. We have a present that we want to get from you, and that present is going to iTunes and leaving us a review. Well, that really helps us find new listeners. It's a great way to spread the holiday cheer.
Yeah.
If you haven't done it yet, please do.
Yeah, we will have content up through the site through Christmas and New Year's. So
when you don't want to listen to your family yelling over the Christmas dinner.
Or yelling at each other while playing Mario Kart.
Exactly right. Or you're like, how come all my friends are celebrating this fake, weird heathen holiday?
How come they're not praying to the shrine of the blue shell? Thanks again, everyone, for listening. Always appreciate it. And we'll be talking to you again next week.
Bye.
See ya. Every time we